So now we come to the third domain. Now Sri Aurobindo has spoken of this third element in the very first paragraph of this chapter. I think we can first go to that phrase or that sentence. If you open page number 47, now you read out to me that sentence which is connected with the teacher in the first paragraph. Got it? Tell me. Good.
Uplifting our knowledge and effort into the domain of spiritual experience, direct suggestion, example and influence of the...
Good. So there are three things. First, uplifting our knowledge and effort is the first thing. Uplifting. Effort already puts our hands upwards. The teacher comes to uplift our hands, which are already upwards. So that is his first function, uplifting our knowledge and effort. And this effort is uplifted so high that we can enter into the spiritual experience. And then there are three important words, the direct suggestion, example and influence. These are the three key words in every process of teaching. Direct suggestion, example and influence. The teacher does not teach as much as he suggests. The difference between teaching and suggestion. So a good teacher suggests. Even his instruction, normally the teacher gives lectures, but lectures should be in the form of suggestions. It is not like a taskmaster giving instructions which you have got to obey and fulfill. A good teacher does not instruct as much as to suggest. So the teacher suggests, then he gives example of himself. So he does not teach exactly, but he does perform within himself what he wants to convey to the others. So he provides an example. And third is the influence. This word influence is a very delicate word. What is influence? I shall come to that word very shortly. But I just wanted to underline the words uplifting our knowledge and effort. First thing. Second, the domain of spiritual experience. And third is suggestion, example and influence. And now when we are reading on the teacher, we shall mark where Sri Aurobindo refers to these three things. As the Supreme Shastra, this is page number 55. As the Supreme Shastra of the Integral Yoga is the eternal Veda, secret in the heart of every man, so its supreme guide and teacher is the inner guide, the world teacher, Jagat Guru, secret within us. It is he who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of his knowledge. That light becomes within us the increasing glory of his own self-revelation. He discloses progressively in us his own nature of freedom, bliss, love, power, immortal being. He sets above us his divine example as our ideal and transforms the lower existence into a reflection of that which it contemplates. By the inpouring of his own influence and presence into us, he enables the individual being to attain to identity with the universal and transcendent. There is a theory in India, without the teacher, you can never, never, never attain the divine. That is why people in India are always advised, find out a teacher. Now normally when this is said, the teacher is referred to as any good human being who is supposed to have the power, knowledge, experience which he can transmit to his pupil. Therefore, in India, people are in search of what is called human teachers. Now, when in this paragraph Sri Aurobindo uses the word teacher, he does not refer to any human teacher. He refers to the world teacher. He refers to the inner guide. Just as the Shastra of Integral Yoga is not contained in any book, similarly, the teacher to whom we have to refer or to whom we have to turn is not any human teacher, but the divine teacher, the divine himself. It is this divine teacher who is in our heart. Just as Shastra is in the heart, similarly the teacher also is in our heart. The place of the human teacher is subordinate, is a concession, you might say. If you need him, you can have him, but it is not necessary that you should have a human teacher. The teacher is always there with you, in you. Now, what is the mark of that teacher? How do we experience him? It is he who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of his knowledge. That light becomes within us the increasing glory of his own self-revelation. These two sentences are very difficult to understand, although linguistically they are not difficult, but let us try to understand them. First, it is he who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of his knowledge. First there is the concept of darkness, and then there is a concept of resplendent light. Light again is qualified, because there can be physical light, there can be rational light, light of the reason, and there can be light of his knowledge. It is not rational knowledge, it is not physical light, but there is a light, light of his knowledge. What is that light of his knowledge? Let us ask the question, what is knowledge? Then we shall find out what is his knowledge. Whenever we speak of knowledge, the word knowledge is incomplete Because we ask the question, knowledge of what? Knowledge of whom? So every time that we use the word knowledge, necessarily we speak an incomplete phrase. Do you have knowledge? If I ask this question, do you have knowledge? The question is still incomplete unless you add a word, knowledge of this, knowledge of that, etc. Normally, the word knowledge refers to a process of uncovering. You uncover what is covered. So there is an object which is uncovered, which is covered. And when you uncover that object, then there arises the knowledge of that object. So knowledge is basically a process of uncovering. We also use the word discovering. You discover. There are many things which are discovered merely by words. You speak a word and the object is uncovered. When the child learns in the beginning, the child learns very often only by words. I saw a cat. Very simple. The word cat, when the child is told this is cat, there is an uncovering for the child. He sees the object and the word cat uncovers that object. So much that next time, even when the object is not present, the mere mention of the word immediately gives an image of the real cat. So word is a very powerful instrument of uncovering. That is why whenever you use the word knowledge, our first concern is with the word. That is the reason why many educators begin to speak to you about words. Whenever a word is spoken, something happens in your consciousness. It's not a physical light, but something that begins to uncover and something begins to glow. It may be an image that glows, it may be an idea that glows. We do not think very often that ideas are like light, because ideas can run about even in the physical darkness. But the fact is that ideas are like small lamps, small lights. And these ideas are ignited by words. But there are limits of words. Everything cannot be uncovered by words. Even if I use a word, if you have not seen the object, the word makes no meaning. And the object can be seen, the physical objects can be seen, only if physical light is thrown upon the object. So there is a connection between the light and the object. Now there are objects which are self-luminous. You don't need to throw light upon the object. The object itself is glowing by its own light. In which case you don't have to take a torch and put a light on it from outside. But all objects are not self-luminous. Therefore, you have to throw light upon many objects which are not self-luminous. A star which you are seeing is self-luminous. Therefore, you don't have to throw a torch upon the stars. The moon is not self-luminous. As you know, the moon shines by the light thrown upon it by the sun. The sun is self-luminous. But in any case, there is a connection between the object and the light. If the object is self-luminous, you don't have to throw light on it. But if the object is not self-luminous, then you have to throw light on it. But all objects is known through light. Object and knowledge, object and light are both needed in order to have knowledge. Now there is knowledge itself is a light. I said previously that light thrown upon object gives you knowledge. But knowledge itself can be regarded as light. Most often, it is by knowledge, by uncovering, that knowledge is generated. And therefore, light and knowledge are regarded as synonymous. Now, Sri Aurobindo says here, read again now, after this explanation, it is He who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of His knowledge. God to us is in darkness. We don't see Him anywhere. We see so many objects, but we don't see God. The Divine Teacher is not seen. He is in darkness, you might say. It's a great surprise that one who is all luminous is unseen by us. Actually speaking, the only thing that we can know is the Divine, because He is all luminous. But somehow there is a phenomenon of darkness which has covered that all luminousness, which is itself a surprise. How can all luminous be covered? This is a very important question. One day you will ask me and we shall spend 2-3 days on it. How can the all luminous be covered? But at present we only start with this statement. It's a fact that we do not see the all luminous. It's a fact. So, the Divine is all luminous and yet covered to our eyes. Something has happened. What has happened? How it has happened? Why has it happened? These questions are extremely important. And one of the specialties of the book, The Life Divine, which we are reading, is that this book answers this question in detail, which no book in the world answers. No book in the world has answered these questions as much in detail as The Life Divine has answered. If I came to The Life Divine with so much of satisfaction, it is mainly because it is the only book in the world which has answered this question in detail. how has the all luminous become covered? What is the process by which this has happened? What is the nature of light that it can be covered? Can the self-luminous be covered? But this is what has happened. This effect at present to our psychology, this effect we don't see God. The self-luminous and all-luminous, the divine, we don't see Him. In other words, there is a darkness. That darkness by which we are not able to see the all-luminous. We see so many other things, but not He. So Sri Aurobindo says that it is He who Himself destroys our darkness. By what means? By the resplendent light of His knowledge. The one who is covered is, as it were, suddenly reveals Himself as self-luminous. It is as if there is an object which at present you don't see, and suddenly it becomes luminous, and then you see it. It is He Himself who switches on the light, as it were, His own light, so that that light falls upon Him and He is seen. This is the mark of a teacher, the divine teacher. When you have the experience of this kind, then you can say, I have now found my teacher. When the teacher reveals Himself by His own knowledge, which is thrown upon Himself, it is the resplendent light of His knowledge, dazing light, a light which you cannot refuse at all. Having seen that light, you have no doubt. Can you ask the sun to prove that it is luminous? Can you ask the sun to prove that it is luminous? Having seen the sunlight, you cannot doubt that there is sunlight. Similarly, here too, there is a self-luminous light of the Supreme. That is why those who have seen God, they have no doubt at all that God exists. We know the story of Swami Vivekananda. As a young man studying in the college, reading books on philosophy and logic, and listening to a number of people who claimed that they know God, they describe God, and he was not convinced. He used to ask a question to everybody who claimed, have you seen God? And nobody could satisfy his query. Until one day, he met Sri Ramakrishna, whom he asked this very question, have you seen God? And Sri Ramakrishna said, yes, only I see Him more vividly than I see you. It is like somebody asking, have you seen the sun? Our answer would be the same. Yes, I have seen the sun, only it is more vivid than all these which are in comparison quite dark. We are all quite dark as compared to the light of the sun. And that was his answer, only I see him more vividly than I see you. That is the mark of the teacher. So one who has seen It is He who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of His knowledge. That light becomes within us. That light becomes within us the increasing glory of His own self-revelation. The light of the divine is a glow within ourselves. Once you see that light does not get extinguished. It is the glow that is born in us, and in that glow we have the revelation both of ourselves and of the divine. He discloses, He uncovers, He discloses progressively in us His own nature of freedom, bliss, love, power, immortal being. When you say you have seen the divine, you have not seen the divine unless you have experienced the divine freedom, the divine bliss, the divine love, the divine power, the divine immortal being. He sets above us His divine example as our ideal and transforms the lower existence into a reflection of that which it contemplates. All the qualities that you have spoken of, freedom, bliss, etc., cannot be understood unless we have an example. A human being or the divine being, merely by looking at the outside, you do not understand His real nature. It is when you come into contact by experience and learn by His example in what way He is free. By freedom is meant capacity of manifesting infinite possibilities. At the same time, any one of these infinite possibilities, that is the freedom. Normally human beings have got only one or two possibilities. I can go here or I don't go there. Two or three, some people have five, six, seven possibilities. 100 possibilities. But that is all limitation. The real freedom comes when there is infinite possibility and also a possibility of selecting any one of them without any compulsion. That is the freedom. And it is by His example that you can see. Once there was a dialogue between the mother and a few disciples. These disciples were not able to see the Divine Mother as the Divine Mother, as most of us. And then Mother suddenly made a remark to them in a conversation. Do not think I am compelled to be here with you. This is a very important sentence. Do not think I am compelled to be with you here. You know, when you discuss any question with anybody, there is an inner assumption that the person to whom you are talking is compelled to be there. He has his own necessity to be there. The real freedom is understood when you find that that person is not compelled. We very often deal with other people as if they are compelled to be where they are. And our relationship is based upon this small assumption. We do not know that the divine is not compelled to be with you. He needs you. That he cannot do without you. That for his fulfillment you are very necessary. So that you can play with that person and make demands upon that person. Human beings, when they are quite ignorant, they deal with the divine as if the divine is a puppet who is required, who is necessitated to be there. And that is what distorts our true relationship with the divine. You are in the right relationship with the divine when you know that he is not compelled to be with you. This is the majesty of the Supreme. Therefore, do not deal with the divine as you deal with so many other things in the world. In the world, things are compelled to be where they are. The chair is compelled to be where it is because you have put it there. It has no capacity to run away. It is compelled to be where it is. It is by seeing the example of the divine that you see that in the divine consciousness there is no compulsion. If he is with you, it is because he has so chosen freely. There are thousands of possibilities. There is a beautiful example given in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna says to Sri Krishna, "I will not fight." And Sri Krishna says, first, even if you run away from the battlefield, you will be compelled to come back. That is the nature of the human incapacity. It may think I'll run away, but that very nature will compel him to come back. This is the first answer he gives. Even if you want to go away, you'll be compelled to come back. Then he also says, even if you are not here, I don't need you. My goal will be achieved even if you decide one way or the other. The divine is not compelled to have Arjuna in the field. Both ways he answers this question. The divine freedom is of such a high majestic nature. If you think that, oh, without me God's work will not be done, have no illusion at all. If he makes you his instrument, it is because he's pleased to do it. Not that God is compelled to choose you because you are so great, so wonderful. Without him, without you, he cannot do his work. Not at all. There is no compulsion at all. It's a beautiful anecdote. It is reported as a real story. But even if it's not a real story, it can be a real story. There was once a great leader called Shivaji. You have heard his name perhaps, Shivaji. He was a great leader of Marathas, Maharashtrians. He was creating a new nation, a new aspiration among the people of Maharashtra. And therefore, the then emperor of India, Aurangzeb, was opposed to him thoroughly. And always he used to send his soldiers and big generals to chase Shivaji and to kill him. There are many stories of this chase and the stories of how he was rescued. So once he was with his teacher, Ramdas. This is a story. He had gone to meet his teacher, a very great saint, one who knew God so well. And suddenly, when he was talking to his master, he was told that there is an attack on that very house, and Aurangzeb's men had entered, and Shivaji was alone with his teacher, and several soldiers coming at the same time, it would be impossible for him to escape. In that stage, he just looked at his teacher, and teacher smiled. And the soldiers came and they saw 200 Shivajis. Not one, 200 Shivajis in that room. And the soldiers were bewildered. This is the freedom of the divine. As I told you, it's a story. It may not be real story, but it can happen. Such is the freedom of the divine power. To say that Shivaji can protect himself, by his own power, is an illusion. It is because the divine so chose that he is to be protected, therefore he is protected. Such is the nature of the divine teacher. Such is the freedom of the divine teacher. And the same thing can be said about bliss and love and power and his immortality. We shall discuss all these words later on when we have chance to discuss the experiences of all these elements. He sets above us his divine example. If you have once seen 200 Shivajis coming out like this in one stroke, there is an example. It is by this kind of an example, this is a major example, but there can be minor examples, small examples. But the divine teacher gives an example. It is this example which is extremely important. He embodies what he proposes. Shri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, where he teaches the Karma Yoga, and he says Karma Yoga is a process of doing an action without the desire to enjoy the fruits of action. And Sri Krishna says, I am myself an example of this Karma Yoga because I have nothing to gain from this world, nothing to gain by doing works in the world, and yet I work all the time. So this is the example. He says, I require nothing in this world. I am perfect. Nothing can give me more than what I am. And yet I go on doing works all the time. And he says, if I do not give this example, then the world will perish because people will cease to work. In order that people may be inspired to work, I give an example. And this is, by this means, when you see some embodiment of the ideal, then you know it is possible. It can be done. And then it inspires you to emulate it. This is the mark of a teacher, that he gives an example. He does not merely speak. He practices what he teaches. And he is an embodiment, living embodiment of what he teaches. When Sri Aurobindo and the mother declared that divine life in matter is possible, this is the teaching of the first chapter of the Life Divine, and that it is inevitable, both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have taught this by example. As mother says, when Sri Aurobindo was in the earth, it was a perfect divine life on the earth. And when she said, what Sri Aurobindo had asked me to do is done. It's not merely a teaching. Sri Aurobindo had asked the mother to show, to realize that divine consciousness can manifest fully in matter. Mother said that work is done. It is because of this example that we are all inspired. And that is the mark of the divine teacher. He sets above us his divine examples as our ideal and transforms the lower existence into a reflection of that which it contemplates. Then comes, by the inpouring of his own influence, Sri Aurobindo has said, suggestion, example and influence are the three powers of the teacher. When he reveals himself, he gives you suggestion. That is his instruction. When he gives the example, by showing you, experiencing in you his freedom, bliss, light, immortality, he has taught you through his example. But now comes the third element. By the inpouring of his own influence and presence into us, he enables the individual being to attain to identity with the universal and transcendent. What is this influence? Influence is a radiation. It's a radiation that proceeds from nearness. A good teacher is one who can bring his students an inner intimacy and nearness. Unless a teacher becomes nearer to his students, there is no influence. If the divine influences us, it is because he is very intimate with us. It is by becoming intimate with us that his influence radiates in us. The divine teacher is the most intimate friend and shows his intimacy and presence all the time. It is that which radiates. And by that radiation, the identity with the divine is experienced. Not only intimacy, not only nearness, you are near to him. It radiates influence, and by that influence, the divine experiences one with you. So the instrument of the teacher is nearness. It's not a physical nearness. It is not the position that the teacher occupies in the surroundings of the pupil. It is the inner nearness, how much he is inwardly present. We have the story of Draupadi when she was being derobed in the court in the presence of so many who were standing around her as wolves. She just turns to Sri Krishna in her heart and praise. It did not take time for the divine to come near her. On the spot there was the saving of Draupadi. On the spot. Against a story, but it can happen. It is not a story which cannot happen. It's not a myth in the sense that things are only fictions which cannot happen. They happen on the spot. That is the power of the real prayer. On the spot it can happen. So that is the nearness. And because of his nearness, is the radiation which you call influence. The divine teacher always whispers into your ears. And the human teacher who comes nearer to the divine teacher, he also whispers into your ears. That is why the greatest teaching is Upanishad. You sit near the teacher. You are very, very close to him. The best teaching is done by the teacher, not by discourses, but small words whispered into the ears in close proximity to the pupil. It transforms. One word, a good teacher, when he whispers into the ear of the child or of the student, can you be like this? In 1 second, the character can be changed. Told to the student, can you ever be angry? One word to the child, spoken by the teacher with that intimacy, the character of anger can vanish. Can you be in a state of revenge? A teacher telling a child, a student, with that intimacy, the whole sense of revenge can vanish in 1 second. That is the power of influence. So once again, influence is a radiation that proceeds from the teacher because of his nearness, because of his intimacy with the inmost recesses of the student. That is the influence. So by the inpouring of his own influence and presence into us, he enables the individual being to attain to identity. If you hear one day the word of the divine in this fashion, are you so narrow? One word from the divine and you become universal and transcendent. He can attain to identity with universal and transcendent. These are the marks of the divine teacher. We shall read again once more the whole paragraph. As the supreme shastra of the integral yoga is the eternal Veda, secret in the heart of every man, so its supreme guide and teacher is the inner guide, the world teacher, Jagat Guru, secret within us. It is he who destroys our darkness by the resplendent light of his knowledge. That light becomes within us the increasing glory of his own self-revelation. He discloses progressively in us his own nature of freedom, bliss, love, power, immortal being. He sets above us his divine example as our ideal and transforms the lower existence into a reflection of that which it contemplates. By the inpouring of his own influence and presence into us, he enables the individual being to attain to identity with the universal and transcendent. Fine, beautiful, no? Right? Let us move forward now. What is his method and his system? This is the question we ask of every teacher. How does he teach? What is the situation which he creates for teaching? All schools are systems. In these systems, you have a classroom, you have books, you have lectures, you have timetables, you have syllabi to cover. These are the methods and systems of education. But the divine teacher, what is his method and what is his system? And Sri Aurobindo says, he has no method and every method. There is nothing special, unique. We cannot say this is his system. Does he beat his students? Does he uplift everybody? Does he love everybody? Does he instruct all the time? Or at a certain time only? Or in a certain way only? There is no method. And every method, yes, he does everything. Every method that is suitable to the individual. When we speak of free progress system and where we emphasize so much individuation, it is because of this. There is no method actually. What is it that will uplift a given individual or all? Whether you are group class or individual class. Depends. You don't make a rule, there will be no group classes. That doesn't apply to the divine teaching. You say he will have always individual teaching. That doesn't apply to him. Depends upon who before him he is going to be present. Now Sri Aurobindo answers this question in depth. His system is a natural organization of the highest processes and movements of which the nature is capable. His system is a natural organization, not artificial organization, it's a natural organization of the highest processes and movements of which the nature is capable. Everybody's nature, he knows quite well. He knows what is samaya. And how samaya can be uplifted. What is the best in his nature? How the different elements in his nature are all coordinated or discoordinated? What is the stand in which he is now? Every element in him, according to the divine's eye, has behind it the divine supremacy. If I am weak, behind my weakness is the divine strength. If I am dull, behind the dullness is the divine luminous light. Behind everything that is there, the divine always stands behind him in his full glory. So he knows everybody's nature and knows how his present weaknesses, his present dullness, how all that can be cured because the divine is behind it. But to everybody he gives, he organizes in such a way that very smoothly everything flowers and blooms and becomes resplendent. He knows the timing of everybody, when he should flower, when he should sleep, when he should rest, when he should relax. Doesn't force anybody, but creates an organization which is natural to him. So, his system is a natural organization of the highest processes and movements of which the nature is capable. Applying themselves even to the pettiest details and to the actions the most insignificant in their appearance with as much care and thoroughness as to the greatest, they in the end lift all into the light and transform all. Whether you know the divine or not, whether you put yourself into the divine's hands or not, he is always your teacher and always uplifts you. But if you are aware, the speed becomes so great, almost like a miracle. It is like Sri Aurobindo said to one of the disciples, that within a short time he made so much progress, as if a lame man was to throw away on the spot his crutches and was running with a tremendous speed. This can happen within a short time if we go into the hands of the divine with consciousness. When we are unconscious, we are what we are now. Even there, the divine is constantly striving to lift us naturally. By combining your nature in the right manner and giving you experiences which are necessary for you to grow. But if you go consciously to him, put yourself into his hands, then the progression will be tremendously fast. Because he attends to every detail, whether big or small, because in his eyes there is nothing big or small. Everything is equal. It is in our small eyes that we make distinctions of big and small. But in his eyes there is nothing that is big, nothing that is small. And therefore, in every detail, the divine constantly goes on pouring and uplifting. Now, how much he will pour, in what way he will pour, it depends upon the individual. So there is no particular system, not particular method. Whatever is suitable by which this uplifting is possible, that is the method that will be used. For in his yoga, there is nothing too small to be used and nothing too great to be attempted. As a servant and disciple of the master has no business with pride or egoism, because all is done for him from above, so also he has no right to despond because of his personal deficiencies or the stumblings of his nature. It's a tremendous balm to every disciple, to every student. Do not worry about your deficiencies, because the master is at work and you are in his hands, and he can put the necessary light, the necessary strength, the necessary knowledge, necessary skill, whatever is needed. For the force that works in him is impersonal or superpersonal and infinite. The full recognition of this inner guide, master of the yoga, lord, light, enjoyer, and goal of sacrifice, all sacrifice and effort, is of the utmost importance in the path of integral perfection. The teacher, the supreme teacher at present, is covered, not recognized by us. So long as he is not recognized by us, our speed of work and progress will be as we are now. But if you can recognize him, the full recognition, not only ordinary recognition, Sri Aurobindo speaks of the full recognition, of this inner guide, master of the yoga, lord, light, enjoyer, and goal of all sacrifice and effort. When you recognize the master with all these qualifications, The master is the Lord, he is the light, he is the enjoyer, he is the goal of all sacrifice and effort. When we do this, then we shall attain to integral perfection. What is integral perfection? There is one very long chapter on this subject in this very book. We shall read one day the concept of integral perfection. And we are all called upon to arrive at that integral perfection. And that perfection cannot come without our full recognition of the master. That is why it is said, without the teacher you can never attain the goal. But it is not human teacher. We have to recognize the divine teacher. And that teacher is within us. And the more we recognize him, the more we come nearer him and attain to perfection. It is immaterial whether he is first seen as an impersonal wisdom, love and power behind all things, as an absolute manifesting in the relative and attracting it, as one's highest self and the highest self of all, as a divine person within us and in the world, in one of his or her numerous forms and names, or as the ideal which the mind conceives. These are the first experiences, first ways by which you recognize him. So whether you recognize him in this way or that way or that way or that way, it doesn't matter. Begin your recognition of him. You recognize him as impersonal or recognize him as personal. You do as you choose. As Sri Krishna says, ye yatha mam prapadyante tan tatheva bhajamyam. As they approach me, so I approach them. He makes a room according to your approach. If you think that he loves you immensely, he will come to you as immense love. If you think that he is angry with you, he comes to you with anger. If you think that he is taskmaster, he will come to you as a taskmaster. If you think that he is impersonal, he only stands with his eyes uplifted, then you will find him uplifted eyes, and you have to make a tremendous effort to approach him. If you think that he is all the time behind you, he is behind you. If you think that he is in front of you, he is always in front of you. If you think he is a child, he is your child. If you think he is your father, he is your father. In whatever form you may look upon him, it depends upon you. So you choose your own way. What do you like the divine to be with you? You start in the beginning in that form. Ultimately all aspects will come, and one after the other. As you start with one, gradually his integrality will be manifested little by little. So he says, whether it is immaterial, whether he is first seen as an impersonal wisdom. Impersonal wisdom. You can approach him as you approach a book. This book contains wisdom. And you read it, it is impersonal. Whether you read it or another person reads it, it is the same book. Equal to everybody. Nothing special for you. But you may also approach him as personal wisdom. Then he answers your specific questions very personally. It depends upon how you want him. So whether it is immaterial, whether he is first seen as an impersonal wisdom or impersonal love or impersonal power. You may conceive of God as distributing lollipops to every one of us, all equally. Everybody is going to him and is giving one lollipop to everybody. It is impersonal love. It is love, but impersonal love. But he may also give you specially bounty, and to others only one. If you approach him as personal love, that also is It depends upon how you approach him. Impersonal love or impersonal power. You can approach him as absolute, manifesting in the relative and attracting it. When you conceive of the divine as an absolute, he is so high, so remote, inaccessible. Then he's inaccessible also. He's so high all the time, very high. You have the image of climbing staircase which does not end. On and on and on you climb. And you find that he's always high above still. You never reach him. He's inaccessible. That also is true of him. But you just imagine that he's your child and he comes to you as a child and remains with you all the time. That also is his nature. Therefore, you can approach him in that way also. So, as an absolute manifesting in the relative and attracting it, as one's highest self and the highest self of all, as a divine person within us and in the world, in one of his or her numerous forms, you may see him as Durga. You may see him as Shiva. You may see him as Krishna. In many forms, in one form or many forms. And he is all these. In the beginning, you must choose any one of them. It's an infinite freedom on your part. And gradually, he will reveal to you all the aspects. In the end, we perceive that he is all and more than all these things together. The mind's door of entry to the conception of him must necessarily vary according to the past evolution and the present nature. How you will look upon him will depend upon your past evolution and your present condition of consciousness.